One of the first stops for those interested in renting an apartment or buying a house or condo is likely the internet. And if you've done this lately, you know that some real estate photos can be breathtaking while others can fall flat. So we went to find out, how do real estate photographers in Atlanta keep up with a housing market that's been booming for years?
We shoot during the day, my editors are editing at night. And that's the only way that we can even think about being able to turn it 24 hours.
This is WABE TechCast, exploring how technology shapes Atlanta and how Atlanta shapes technology. I'm Emil Moffitt. On this Remix episode, we talk tech and real estate, including a management firm that's allowing its corporate tenants to pay rent with cryptocurrency. And later, we stay in the crypto space with a deep dive into NFTs in Atlanta's art scene.
Once that all clicked and I started realizing that, like, the digital files that I'm actually creating are actually the originals. And my paintings that I'm painting, whether that's a mural or a painting in the studios, almost a replica. I mean, it's still an original in its own sense, but there is some value in the digital piece of it.
That's ahead.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Matt Harrison climbs the front steps of a gray two-story house surrounded by trees in North Fulton County. He has a tripod in one hand and is pulling a small rolling suitcase in the other. The neatly organized bag has room for a couple of cameras, a flash, memory cards, and more.
So my bag really has everything it needs in it while I'm at a shoot. If I need to bring out, you know, my drone's packed in there. We use a DJI Air 2S, which does everything we needed to do, and it's really nice and compact.
About 6 years ago, Harrison founded this real estate photography business called Curb Appeal. While most of the gear he brings along is high-tech, there's one noticeably low-tech item, a small metal clicker, like you might see in the hands of a person taking your concert ticket.
So this is the easiest way that I've found to keep track of how many shots we've done.
For this house, 4 bedrooms, 3 baths, 3,000 square feet, he hopes to come away with about 45 photos. And as soon as he walks in, he starts surveying to see how best to capture each room.
If the house has a lot of dark wood, like this house here has a lot of dark wood within the stairs and door frames and that, well, dark wood, anything dark absorbs light. So we would have to try to introduce more light to kind of capture that scene.
We walk up the stairs for photos of the main bedroom first.
So as you can see with that flash, it basically is like it just spreads this light and it kind of just fills in shadows and kind of brings out colors and it allows us to accurately match the colors when we go into post editing.
Real estate photography most closely resembles landscape photos. You aren't necessarily trying to capture the details up close.
It's about kind of giving them a unique perspective to get them more interested. And the whole purpose is to get them interested, so they call the agent and then schedule a showing, right? It's almost like, I put it like, it's like dating, right? you don't put it all out there.
Leave some mystery.
Leave some mystery, exactly.
And with that, we move on to one of the most challenging rooms in the house in which to capture a photo.
These bathrooms are really sometimes difficult because you got mirrors right where you set the camera. There's no other position. I mean, you're actually doing contortion techniques to, you know, because you're like in such a small space. So it's a challenge in smaller spaces, like smaller bathrooms. But that's why they hire, you know, professional photographer, because that's what, you know, we do.
A decent-sized two-story house can take Harrison about an hour to photograph. After he's done here, he packs up his gear and heads to photograph a condo in Northwest Atlanta. But this job is a little different. The condo is empty.
Well, obviously, there's no furniture. So it's actually sometimes good and sometimes bad. Good in that it, you know, it's easier. It's actually an easier to get through the job a lot quicker because I'm not dealing with furniture and all that stuff. So, and then a lot of times too, it's like we'll shoot it like this, but then we'll actually virtually stage it. So, and again, you know, doing virtual staging is less cost than doing regular staging, because regular staging could cost upwards of thousands and thousands of dollars, where, you know, the agent could spend $50 per photo, per room to virtually stage it, and it looks pretty much identical to, you know, you couldn't tell the difference.
Harrison works with a team of 10 photographers in Atlanta and some more in Texas. He says each person can photograph 5 to 6 properties a day, and the company promises a 24-hour turnaround time on photos.
So we shoot, and then we take those files, we upload it to our, we have an editing server. We have a team of editors that take those files, and then they go and do their editing and then basically turn those around within 24 hours. So the process is we shoot during the day, my editors are editing at night. And that's the only way that we can even think about being able to turn it 24 hours, because, you know, we can't shoot, edit, and all that stuff and have it done. We would just kill ourselves.
Curb Appeal not only photographs residential properties, but commercial spaces too, even billboards sometimes. And with Atlanta's bustling real estate market, there's plenty of work to be done. Ahead on WABE TechCast, check, money order, or Bitcoin? Why one property management company has started accepting cryptocurrency for rent payments. Michael Phillips is president of Jamestown, a real estate management company with properties around the world, and
in Atlanta, we have Pond City Market, the Westside Provisions District, and Buckhead Village, to name a few.
The company recently began doing something new, accepting rent payments via cryptocurrency. So we connected with Phillips to find out more about it.
The crypto exchanges have seen a lot of growth in the last 2 years, and the idea of tokenomics being a central part of how people are transacting is growing in popularity.
And so how has it worked out so far? Have there been tenants who have kind of taken you up on the offer?
We have had tenants taking us up on the offer. We've also had tenant mandates in cities like New York and San Francisco that is a requirement of office tenancy negotiations. And so as we start to see that sector, the innovation digital economy sector, become a growing part of the tenant base, we need to be responsive to the industries that they represent.
And take us through what you can as far as step by step, how the process works.
I mean, you know, my 101 about this is that in non-digitally native populations, we think of airline points and credit card points as a value system to us, and often trade, buy things in them, provide benefits through them. And I think in the crypto world, it's a similar dynamic. It's an alternative to dollar denominated or euro denominated currencies that we're familiar with. But the other piece of that I would say is relevant is oftentimes if you buy something in euros or in yen or in real, you're converting from a dollar anyway. So this is the reverse transaction. We set up through BitPay, which is the largest sort of platform to exchange currencies, a relationship that a tenant can come with a cryptocurrency of their choice. They can settle in what the dollar or euro denominated lease structure is and have a spot conversion pricing, and we receive the dollars downstream in accordance with our lease structures and business model. So it's a pretty seamless transaction, but allows people to have flexibility in how they pay.
And so how did this partnership with BitPay come about?
We, you know, went out into the space and looked at who the leaders were and the most efficient sort of model to do it. And they seemed to be the best fit.
And is this something that your company expects will become more commonplace in the future?
I think you'll see both the digital world becoming increasingly intertwined with the physical world. And through that, I think all of the levers and engagement tools that people have will become more ubiquitous. We, if you have children and they're playing Roblox today, they have a relationship to tokenization that we didn't really have. And as we move into what becomes the standard and how people engage, I think you'll see alternative currencies and tokenomics becoming a key part of how people trade and value in their lives.
Jamestown Real Estate's Michael Phillips speaking with us earlier this year. Ahead on WABE TechCast Remix, NFT 101.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at GeorgiaHealthInitiative.org.
Have you donated to WABE yet? I know you've heard us talking about why it's important, but it doesn't have to be this big decision. You can give at whatever amount fits your budget. It can be a spur-of-the-moment thing. You already get so much out of public radio, so just go for it. Visit wabe.org/donate and become a member right now. And thank you.
What is an NFT, and is there an easy way to explain it? I put those questions and others to Ben Kaczynski. He teaches at Emory's Goiseta Business School.
I usually get folks to think about the fact if they have an object that's made of atoms, they can give it away and then they don't have it anymore. When we have digital assets, we can copy it, give it away in many times over, and we can also give it away and we still have it. So there's nothing that is protectable or it's eminently fungible. They can give it away and you'll still have it. So if something is that easy to replicate, how do we make it unique? So with the use of blockchain technologies and immutable records that allow us to label something as unique in a recognizable fashion, I can take that artifact, that image, that piece of music that is eminently exchangeable and make it unique and identifiable, and therefore possibly more valuable.
And how familiar do artists have to be, or active do artists have to be in the cryptocurrency space to be able to take advantage of NFTs?
There was a perception by many of the artists that I spoke with early on that, oh, this would be difficult for them to get into. But there are so many tools and mechanisms now that it's rather easy for artists to move some of their activities into this space.
Artists like Greg Mike, who's called Atlanta home for the last 15 years.
My style, I would say, is kind of pop art, street art, contemporary art, a lot of bright colors, bold line work. Draw a lot of inspiration from old school retro cartoons.
As we heard at the beginning of the podcast, NFTs were not on his radar until about 4 years ago. But since that event in San Francisco, he started learning more about them, and it began to change the way he thinks about his creative process.
All my work is created digitally first. So once that all clicked and I started realizing that, like, the digital files that I'm actually creating are actually the originals. and my paintings that I'm painting, whether that's a mural or a painting in the studios, almost a replica. I mean, it's still an original in its own sense, but there is some value in the digital piece of it.
And putting value on a digital original is a big part of what NFTs are all about. Some refer to them as virtual souvenirs or digital certificates of authenticity. As someone whose artwork is featured on murals in Atlanta and beyond, he sees another benefit of NFTs to preserve artwork that will very likely be painted over at some point.
Maybe that's a way to monetize, you know, the artwork in the streets, which is something that disappears, and the blockchain is something that's immutable and there forever.
And Greg Mike is not alone among artists making use of this new way to connect directly with fans and art collectors.
My name is Ashley Franz. I'm the CEO of ANF Consulting.
Her work with cryptocurrency, blockchain, and NFTs began about 4 years ago, too. She sees it as one way for artists from underserved communities to level the playing field.
It allows artists to be able to raise capital and get funding for things without having to get a loan, without always having to use all of their personal income, or without having to really have a label. Some of the big Black artists in the NFT space, Black Dave and Latasha and Iman, they're really, really good examples of small independent artists that have been able to sell out NFT projects and make a lot of money that they can utilize for their projects through NFTs.
Cutting out the traditional middleman, be it a financial institution, art gallery, or music label, represents one of the underpinnings of NFTs, blockchain, and cryptocurrency. Another aspect of blockchain are what are called smart contracts. That's where money is automatically paid to an artist if an NFT is resold. All of this, says Greg Mike, can be very appealing to burgeoning artists trying to stand out and make a living. It was early in 2021 that Greg Mike minted his first NFT collection and followed up with more this year.
Yeah, it was crazy because, like, as soon as that drop happened, it was like the DMs and Instagram, Twitter, everything else just exploded with everyone like, hey, can I pick your brain? And yeah, it was a little overwhelming at the time, but I'm glad I could, like, you know, push that knowledge forward and help, you know, onboard folks. I think it's important with what we're doing is to make sure that we can help other people understand it, because it is daunting, you know?
While NFTs are seen as a potential big boost to artists, how accessible are they to consumers of music and art? Again, Professor Ben Kaczynski at Emory.
Well, for better or for worse, it's very accessible. It's easy for people to get into the space by creating a wallet in the crypto domain. And there are many forums for buying and possessing and retaining those digital assets. So in some sense, it's easy. And other sense, I'm concerned that it's easy, because just as with the cryptocurrency side of the house, that many people are jumping in without thinking.
Jumping in, he says, and spending big bucks on NFTs, thousands, sometimes millions, without knowing what value they may have months or years down the road.
We've got to be careful on that what we're investing in aligns with our timeline of relevance. That what is it meaningful to you at this time, and will it be meaningful in the future? And so people have to take a long horizon, even in dealing with a short horizon transaction.
And while the staying power of NFTs is still unknown, he says there's significant value in the blockchain technology that makes NFTs possible. He likens it to the tech that's made it possible to summon a car ride with essentially one tap on your smartphone.
Imagine trying to do Uber 20 years ago. We could not do an Uber 20 years ago, but now we can, because the complexity that is needed for an Uber is ready for us. And that's what's forming now. The infrastructure that will serve us to do new kinds of things and new kinds of actions and commerce and society.
And part of that commerce, Ashley France says, could be using NFTs as event tickets or membership cards.
So whether that be behind the scenes content, meetups, VIP, in-person events, etc., And then once you've have utilized this membership, or maybe you move, you're able to sell it and somebody else will have access to it.
Greg Mike says NFTs could provide new pathways for artists to explore the metaverse, this meshing of the real world and the world of augmented reality.
You know, the whole time I'm creating now, I'm thinking about like, how can this be more than just like a still image on a wall, right? Like, or how can this painting come to life? You know, can this painting that I'm hanging in the gallery have an AR component so that, you know, you pull it up on your phone and the characters move and their eyes look around?
The possibilities seem abundant, but the tech, science, art, and legal worlds are all still trying to grapple with the nuts and bolts of NFTs. Take intellectual property or IP, for example. Some artists are having to spend significant time and resources making sure their music or artwork isn't being ripped off and minted as an NFT. And according to Ashley France, artists creating NFTs have to be careful too, to make sure they're not infringing on the rights of others.
As artists do, they take things and make it their own, but not realizing that it doesn't matter if you're being creative about it or that it's an NFT, it's still infringing on other people's IP.
And then there's the blockchain technology behind NFTs. It's still new and inefficient when it comes to energy use, and that's been the subject of criticism from some in the art community. As Professor Kinsinski explains, the processes working in the background to maintain the chain, if you will, require a significant amount of computing power.
They're intended to create a trustable process, but by so doing, they create negative impact on energy consumption. And those mechanisms need to be changed underneath. This will be more underneath rather than at the front end of it.
As those in the NFT and blockchain space continue to work through these issues, Greg Mike sees a lot of upside.
You know, I like the idea of putting money into creative people's hands because I think that's where you really see some good that can come out of it. So I'm excited to see, you know, how people are, you know, gaining financial freedom from this, but then also putting it back into the creative ecosystem and seeing like what beautiful things come out of that.
Our look at NFTs in the Atlanta art scene was produced in partnership with WABE's daily arts and culture program, City Lights, heard mornings at 11 and weeknights at 9 on WABE. WABE TechCast airs each Tuesday during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on 90.1. You can also listen to past episodes on our website, wabe.org, or subscribe through your favorite podcast app. New episodes of TechCast return in September. Until then, reach us on Twitter, at WABE News, and I'm at Emil Moffitt, EmilMoffatt. WABE's Chief Content Officer is Scott Wolfel. Our Managing Editor is Alex Helmick. I'm Emil Moffitt. Thanks for listening to WABE TechCast.